Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit rules. Wake up the silence, maturity. I'm feeling the love in the silence club. I can feel the space between us. Little Captain and the common man. Time to show them all.
Another episode of the Star Chamber Show. I am Sayla Janelle, and the amazing Alex Brown is with me, as always. And we have got another great show for you tonight. So we're really stoked. Before we get going, Imaginarium. If you don't know it, you need to be there. If you like writing, if you like books, if you like genre stuff, if you want to learn more about all of that stuff, www.entertheimaginarium.com. That is a convention all about creative writing in Louisville, Kentucky, October 7th through 9th this year. You'll want to be involved on that. Other than that, it's Women in Horror Month. So, yeah, it's the most wonderful amazeballs time of the year. Yeah. So.
Yes. Oh.
Yep.
And I brought the month in right, too. It's like midnight on the last eve of January. I had Carrie over at my house, and we decided to pull out the Jack Ketchum movie, The Woman, based off the book by the same title, and loved every second of it. It was so awesome. If no one has ever, if you haven't seen it, go see it. It is a hard movie to stomach. I mean, it is based off of a Jack Ketchum book, but you need to watch it for this month, just saying.
Yeah. Now, I the movie I love isn't out this month yet. It will be out in March. I think it got delayed till March release. But Nina Forever is the one I'm so excited about. I got to review this for a San Francisco Horror Film Festival, and it is so good. It really is like blends dark fantasy and horror with relationship movies. It's like if you ever wanted a dramatic relationship movie with a lot of blood and dead. It's great. It's fantastic. It's a beautiful movie. Also, for Mocha Memoirs Press, which is another group that I write for, we're doing a Women in Horror Month flash fiction contest. I've already posted the link on the Star Chamber Show page. If you can write a short story, horror story, with a female point of view character that's 1,000 words or less, all the submission information is in the link on the Star Chamber Show page. I'm actually one of the judges, so send it in and I will judge you. And winner, grand prize winner gets a $20 Amazon gift card, and the top 10 finalists are going to have their stories featured in a promotional small mini anthology used to promote Mocha Memoirs Press. So it's all sorts of fun.
I might have to submit to that.
I think you're going to have to. I know,
now,
right?
Speaking of women in horror, the movie The Witch that's coming up, that's already stirring up some controversy. It's supposed to be released on the 19th. And pretty much the other day, they had blasted all over Facebook, the movie did, that they had been endorsed by the Satanic Temple.
Oh, right.
And so people are freaking out over it. And I'm like, really, this is just like the time when, you know, the writer-director of Rosemary's Baby went to Anton LaVey for, you know, gimmicks and stuff like that. I'm like, it's just
well,
a movie,
or
get over it.
Or Marilyn Manson getting ordained by was it LaVey or was it whoever was under him at the time? I don't remember, but that was a huge deal too. But
and I don't mean to take the conversation in this direction. I really don't.
No, you're fine.
But it was hilarious because one person commented on there, I really want to see this movie, but I feel bad about seeing it because I'm a Christian and I just don't know if I should support that. And then as their default picture, they had the cover album of Antichrist Superstar. I'm like, really?
Of course.
Really?
Well, it's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing with the TV show Lucifer is getting a lot of heat about romanticizing the devil and things like that. But I mean, now I've not read the comic. I've read Sandman, but I've not read the spinoff. I'm hoping to, but and I haven't seen the show. But yeah, it's you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm not too certain if I'm gonna see the show. I mean, I might after about a season
or
two. I'm in the Penny Dreadful at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
I'm still very onto the. I mean, Supernatural is like the one that I, you know, will catch up and make sure I'm up to date on. So that's mine, and I feel like that's enough. So I don't know.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like I don't need to see it because at this point I've already seen Supernatural.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the way I feel. Like, I feel like it's already, you know, it's been done, or maybe not been done like that, but still I feel like that's enough for me. Like, I don't need, especially where season 11 is going, like, I don't need more of that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I felt when I started watching the TV show Grimm. I got like maybe about 3 or 4 episodes into it.
I was the same way. Yeah.
I'm like, why am I watching this? I'm already watching it with the different characters. They're known as the Winchesters.
Yeah, exactly. It just really, it didn't hook me at all. Yeah.
And in all honesty, that's kind of why I veered away from Penny Dreadful, because I'm like, it's going to fall into that same rehashing, you know?
Yeah.
And a friend recently bought it for me as a late Christmas present saying, you've got to watch this. And I'm about 4 episodes in, and it has hooked me. I am totally hooked.
That's awesome. That's exciting.
So, besides all of us geeking about what's coming up in women and horror and TV shows and all that good stuff, what are you reading?
What am I reading? I actually just finished, I can't remember if I mentioned this last time or not. I've read 2 fantastic books lately. The first is Fangirl by Rainbow, well, they're both by Rainbow Rowell. That one is kind of about, I think I mentioned this one, a college girl who's a twin starts college, and it's sort of her adjusting, and it really provides a really interesting take on, like, social anxiety, and she also happens to be a fan fiction writer who is very successful at it, and then starts to take actual creative writing classes, so it's kind of touches on the difference of the 2 styles and things like that, and plus, you know, fandom and connection, emotional connection to characters. I really enjoyed it. I really, really liked it. It reminded me a lot of college a little bit for me. I thought it was a really good book. I then went on to read Carry On, which is I think it's supposed to be that character's fan fiction in book form, but it really is, like, if you picture, like, Harry Potter, but for adults, and much more political and much more kind of gray area where it's not like definite good versus definite evil. And it's much more kind of like power based. It's fantastic. It took me a little longer to slog through, but I liked that she does multiple viewpoints, which was the one thing that kind of, you know, I felt like we were missing out on a lot with Harry Potter. So it's really interesting her take on different types of characters. And I don't know. It's really fantastic. It's you know, has some relationships that are not necessarily conventional in mainstream, sure, which I really like. I just really like, you know, that there's not an attempt for all the characters to be super likable or super good. I don't know. I really thought it was really interesting.
Okay. Awesome. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's fun. So what are you reading, Alex Brown?
Well, I kind of feel like I'm cheating because I'm doing an audiobook. It seems like that's the only way I can really enjoy mainstream books anymore. Because when I'm home, I'm editing or writing or reading books that aren't on audiobook. and to stay in the indie world and also the mainstream world, this is kind of how I have to do it. But at the moment, I'm listening to the audiobook, The Great and Secret Show, based off of the novel by Clive Barker. And it's really an interesting book. It's taken me to a lot more places than what I anticipated. And also at the same time, I didn't read the synopsis of the book. I do that a lot of times. I won't read the synopsis of a book because I want it to strictly be a surprise when I read it or listen to it.
Right.
And so you're seeing the generations come together here, such as you begin with the story of the two fathers who impregnated three virgins, and pretty much it's all done in a mystical way. So it's not the actual physical impregnation that they do. It's almost kind of like the Immaculate Conception in a way. But pretty much.
He really likes that type of imagery too in a lot of his work.
Yeah, yeah. And pretty much with this one, though, it does for fantasy what Romeo and Juliet did for Shakespeare.
Okay.
So it's you have the Shakespearean elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the star-crossed lovers to it. But at the same time, it's still that fantastic Clive Barker fantasy
world. Right. I've not read that one, so I'll have to definitely put that on my list.
Not going to lie, it took me a little bit to get into.
Well, a lot of his does for me, but...
Yeah, and, well, normally I can jump into his pretty well, but this one and Imagica, those took me a while to get into.
Imagica took me forever to get, like, I hung in there, but it,
those are the only two by him where I'm like, all right, well, you know, if this were anyone else, I might would quit it at this point. But, you know, it is Clive Barker. I know I'm in for a payoff, so I just kept on listening. And, yeah, it's a good payoff.
Okay, awesome. I'll have to check that out.
All right, well, are you ready to ease into our Sleeping with an Author skit?
Yeah.
All right. I'm in my PJs, I'm in the bed.
Yep.
And I some questions ready for you.
All right, let's do it.
All right, we're going to start off slow, and then we're going to kind of pick up momentum and hit with some harder questions at the end.
So, you know me so well, Alex.
Well, you know, got to get the gears going.
Exactly.
So the first question is, what is new in your life that is not author-related?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I feel like I just do my thing, you know. I'm slowly trying to get organized, which I've been saying for a while, but I really want to just focus on getting things organized and getting my life a little more structured. I'm looking to start sewing again a little bit more. I mean, I do for a living, but more creative stuff. I'm looking towards that, so I'm pricing and hoping to get a little bit better serger than what I have right now. So I've got a few projects in mind that I want to do this year. So doing that, I've taken a little bit of a break because I've gotten busy, but I've also been reviewing stuff for I Smell Sheep, the book blog, which I love. It's kind of Sharon wanted someone to like do guest comic reviews, and I was like, well, yeah, if you're going to give me free comics, I'll do it. But it was very much like our running joke is that this is like my cheap excuse to read Finder as it comes out, because it's like my favorite series ever. So that's one of the perks of when you live an artistic life and you network well. But I'm doing that and just sort of, you know, doing my thing. So I'm not excited. I keep trying to tell people I'm like so not excited at all in my real life.
Well, I'm right there with you. It's just trying to find scheduling at this point. And if I could just get scheduling down, I'd feel like life would go much easier.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I know that feeling.
Well, at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, how when you have a messy room and it's disorganized,
yep.
No one else understands it but you. It's like,
exactly.
Oh, I need to grab this DVD. It's under this mound of clothes over there, you know. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Well, as far as your author life is concerned, mm-hmm. what new projects are you working on?
Well, I'm sort of in the planning phase for a few things. I'm waiting for edits back for a reprint that I'm hoping to do. Long ago, I wrote this urban fantasy demon rocker version of The Red Shoes from Hans Christian Andersen's work. So I'm really excited to get back to re-editing that and sort of making that better and having that out again. I am working on tightening the plot I have in mind and doing some backstory work on Kingdom City. So I am working on that definitely. I'm kind of working on the mythos and some things I have in mind for book two and some other stuff for it. I've been playing with expanding my pioneer horror story, Mooner, which is the vampire versus lumberjack. I'd like to expand that. I'm not sure when or who that's going to be with or what the plan is yet. But I've started writing on that and finding ways to expand that. So I'm sort of experimenting there. And I've also been doing a lot of urban legend research lately. I've always kind of wanted to do kind of like a Ray Bradbury structured type like collection of like, it's a novel, but it's in like short stories about this town where like all these urban legends are real. So I'm really kind of excited to start pushing forward with that too.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. I never do anything halfway, apparently.
Well, you definitely do have a list going on there.
I do. I know. I do.
Well, you know, speaking about fantasy and, you know, what you did with old school,
mm-hmm.
I've heard you talk a lot about how world building is one of your favorite topics to discuss, and world building is something that's new to me as an author, not necessarily as a reader, but more so as writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what an author should do when they are world building.
Jeez, one question on this, huh? It's one of those things that, you know, even though I thought I was prepared going into writing old school, I mean, I think that's going to continuously kick my butt because I tend to think really big. And you forget how detailed a society can be. But at the same time, you know, I think pre-planning everything isn't really possible. So my advice is to sort of, you know, start with a story and then really also kind of parallel to the story, focus on, you know, what type of world are these characters going to live in? You know, you probably have the basic ideas from the story and what type of characters they are. And from then on, you know, it's like I kind of let my mind go with like, well, what are the themes or what are influencing the characters in the story? You know, is it pop culture? Well, what would that be? Or is it, you know, politics? What would that be? You know, is this, you know, where is this world based on? Would they call things different things? And, you know, what can you link up to the world that we know? And a lot of it is, I found too, like the more parallels I link from Kingdom City to like our world, I think it's a little easier for people to ease into. I think it's funnier in some ways. I think it's easier to empathize if you don't go too completely, you know, the opposite way and just go completely foreign to what people are used to. But I think it's, you know, it's just having to constantly be taking notes and figure out what's working. And, you know, that's why I read a lot too, because you just never know what's going to input, you know, whether it's nonfiction or folk stories or whatever, what's going to input what you're trying to do.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. As a matter of fact, that's going to help me with the second book I'm writing for, the Looking Glass Creatures, that I should hopefully have over to Stephen within the next month. I know I've been saying that for about a good 6 months now, but next month might be it.
Hey, you're better than I am at this point, so.
Now, we all learn from our mistakes, and it's human to make mistakes. No one's perfect.
Yeah.
What mistakes have you learned from you are today?
I don't know. I think at times when I was younger, I think, it, you know, part of it is it's hard to look at any, for me to look at any one thing as a complete failure because the market changes so fast and, you know, what you're supposed to do changes so fast anymore. And I think the moment you label something as, oh, I shouldn't have done this or whatever, well, you know, you really couldn't have known most of the time. So I think being really hard on yourself, even though I'm great at being hard on myself, is, you know, is counterproductive. I think when I was first getting started, I think I got to a point where I got so frustrated with the rejections. I think, you know, there were points with publishers I'm not with now that I probably, you know, I stress now to read contracts very thoroughly or have someone else read them or really investigate what you're getting into, that, you know, not all publishers are created equal, and to make sure you understand terms and things like that. I still say, and I haven't yet done it yet because I've sort of had to learn on my feet, but, you know, if people who are still in school or have, you know, access to business classes, you know, the more you can learn about that sort of thing, even though it's not artsy, you know, the better you're probably going to be just to get sort of stuff in your head. So I kind of wish when I was in school, because I've always had, you know, been in the arts in some form or another, that I had at least done a little bit more of that. Other than that, I think, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of it is so much trial and error. I don't know if you can officially call a ton of stuff mistakes, you know, rather than stuff you tried. So, I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, that's very true. I mean, everything you said, it's golden.
Yeah.
It's golden.
I think I'm very much more, I listen more now, I think. I think, you know, I'm a little more assertive now, definitely, about the business aspect of things. I still have to sort of make myself do some stuff that I don't always want to do. But I think, you know, I'm slowly developing a process, too, in terms of writing. You know, I think, you know, now that I've kind of, you know, gotten things published and stuff, I'm trying to, it's not just about throwing stuff out everywhere and seeing what sticks. You know, you're trying to sort of be a little more focused and things like that. So I think it really, those past experiences make me think about, you know, be a little more mindful of where I'm going and what I really want to do instead of just doing whatever comes to me.
Okay. Well, with that being answered, the next question is going to become just a little bit more up. And this can be anything with positive, negative, whatever. And as a matter of fact, yeah, you've already given some great advice here, because learning from your mistakes is the best way to advise others.
Right.
Since the last time we did Sleeping with an Author, what new advice can you give to other authors?
I think the thing is, don't get frustrated. I know it's so easy to say, but I think, you know, just keep learning. Keep working, keep writing. You know, I said last time, just keep working is probably the best advice I've ever been given. Thank you, Billy Worth. But, you know, other than that, it's really true, because you can't really progress unless you keep moving forward. I think a lot of people are frustrated at the market at the moment. And, you know, the good side about social media is that you can learn a lot from other people. The downside is that, you know, you kind of emotionally, you know, a lot of that can really weigh on you. And I think if people let the market and all this stuff, if they take it to heart too much, they're not going to move forward. So at some point you have to really decide, is this what you want to do? And if so, you just do it, fully mindful that it just may, you know, you don't know what the end goal is going to be, you know. But I mean, if you're a teacher, you don't know what the end goal is going to be. If you're a doctor, you don't necessarily know what the end, you hope you know, you think you know, but you know, it's, in art, I get it's a little more gray area, but I think you know, sometimes people put so much weight on having to get somewhere that it kind of holds them back or inhibits what they could be doing right now. Other than that, I would say, you know, just make sure you're presenting yourself well. Don't pick fights if you don't have to, you know, take good author photos. It's one of my pet peeves of seeing people just take random author photos that look like a passport photo or that they were taken in your bathroom or something. I don't know. I just like give a million props. To be fair, I had to vet headshots when I was in, when I was a theater major. That was like when I was working in the admin office, that was what my advisor had me do. And so I learned very fast all his pet peeves, which then became a lot of my pet peeves for headshots. So I am very easily irritated at photos. So, but yeah, just, you know, go in with an open mind, keep doing what you're doing, present yourself well, be mindful of where you're at. You know, it's a process. It's definitely a process. Don't be a tool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When you're an author, what should you expect? I mean, what comes along with the whole nine yards of it?
Oh, pain and frustration. No. Okay. It's anything in the creative arts, because I've done design work, I've done acting, I've done this, you know. It's one of those things I say constantly. If you are doing this for validation, do something else. If you're doing this for money, do something else. You know, if you have to do this, that's fine. But, you know, it's one of those things where there's a lot of people online that are going to have good advice. Wading through that advice is really, you know, it's hard to decide what's going to work for you or what's actually good advice. It's one of those things where I feel like there's no straight path. Like, you know, you go to school for so many years to be like a lawyer or a teacher or something. So you're kind of learning as you go. So it's a little bit confusing. It's a lot of solitude. It's a lot of self-pressure. Sounds great, doesn't it? It's a lot of, you know, these days, I think what people also don't realize is that you also have to promote yourself. So you're also kind of, unless, you know, until you're working with a team of people, you're kind of also your PR manager, your own business person, your own agent, you know, you're doing the whole nine yards. So I think it's one of those things where you really have to understand that it's not just the writing, it's the whole shebang. So it can be a little overwhelming, but I mean, at the other hand, I get paid essentially to think up worlds and run around in them and, you know, do the things and love the things I've always loved. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, with what you had spoken of about doing the footwork, I have learned that the publishers, they do a great deal for you as an author, but also at the same time, you have to do a great deal yourself. And also what is beautiful about conventions is, like, for example, with Imaginarium, I met a lot of new people at Imaginarium, such as what I did at MCFC, BayouCon, Comic-Con, the list continues. And along this way of meeting people that your publisher represents as well besides you, meeting your the authors that you kind of run in the same field with, actually, you kind of also have to support them as well. It's not that you have to, but it's just kind of good that you do, because it becomes one big family. And
exactly.
I mean, I'm not saying, and, you know, luckily enough, I haven't come across this problem. I'm not saying if you come across an author and you read their work and you absolutely hated it, but someone else enjoyed it, that doesn't make it where you have to say, oh, well, I wouldn't read them, their work's not any good. Someone else might pick their book up and think it's the best thing they have ever read. It's just that it's not my taste.
And that's what you learn really fast, is that it's all subjective. You know, you really can't call, you know, there's constant fights online about, oh, why did this get published, blah, blah, blah. You know, you just can't judge what other people are going to like, and you can't internalize that either, as easy as it is to do that.
Exactly. And one thing that I do at cons is as soon as I meet the people that I'm working with under the same publisher, I get to know them as a person. Then I get to know them as
yeah,
an author. And
exactly.
So the thing is, like, if I'm at an event and someone comes up to my table and is like, well, I don't read horror, but I love fantasy. I'm like, well, you got Sayla Janelle and Steven Zimmer over there and J.L. McHill. And so,
exactly.
And the thing is, you have to support one another as much as you
yes,
support yourself, because
yeah,
it's all a tight-knit web out there, and whatever you put out there, it's going to come back to you.
Exactly.
It really is.
Definitely.
Now, with that advice aside, what promises should you look for in a contract, and what red flags should you be aware of when signing a contract to sell your manuscript?
Well, I mean, this really, I've seen all sorts, and it really kind of depends on what it is. One of those things is, like, what rights are they asking for? Is this, you know, typically a lot of things would be first-time print rights, electronic rights, and then, like, if they want to reprint an anthology at some point or something like that, if it's a short, if it's a novel, that's another story. I would say definitely make sure that there's nothing in the clause for, like, a perpetual – there are a couple different names for it, but, like, you don't want anything where the party publishing it is going to own it forever. You also kind of want to be aware that if they're asking for, like, you know, audio rights are one thing now. That's kind of, you know, standard for some places. But, like, if they're asking for movie rights right away, a short story, there's just some things that – why do you need that right now? It's one of the things that you just kind of want to know what rights, why, what are the terms, like, what's the time constraint on stuff, what are they promising you, and, you know, what's the time frame on that, and what are you supposed to do? Just sort of make sure and get a really firm understanding of who's doing what. You know, are they providing you an editor? Are they doing, you know, the cover? If it's a book, you know, what exactly are they giving you? And, you know, if you have any gut instinct or, you know, red flags or, you know, warning bells going off, you know, especially if they're, like, pressuring you to sign now, like, get it back to them now, you know, that may be something where you want to ease off, or at least try to buy time to have someone else look at it. You know, if they're asking for, and, you know, private or financial information, you know, that's no. If they're wanting you to pay for something, you know, no, that's vanity press, no. You know, things like that. Like, you want to make sure you are getting a fair deal, because that's your work, you know. And you don't, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you want to make sure you want to know how long this agreement is and how long they have the rights and what you're allowed to do after that, and all that jazz, too.
Okay. Well, we're going to kind of move away from the steps of writing now. In such a way we're going to move away from what we had been discussing and go a little bit deeper. How are you?
Oh, Lord. Okay.
Before I ask this question, let me just go in and throw this out there.
Yeah.
Over the last few months, we've had a lot of celebrities die. Some
yeah,
of the celebrities we've known, other celebrities we've never met, but we've just simply dreamed of knowing. And one of the artists who affected thousands of millions, probably billions, was when David Bowie passed away. And there were so many artists and authors and creators who came forth on social media and expressed how they were just in a slump. They couldn't do anything. It was like a best friend passed away.
Yeah.
How are you affected when another artist passes away, and how does it affect your work?
Well, him especially. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to have respect when anyone is posting about someone who has affected them artistically has passed away. Whether you like that person or even know who they are or not, I think it's at least important to not go on and be like, oh, people need to shut up or, oh, whatever, you didn't know them, because that's insensitive. You know, for me, God, this is hard. David Bowie was a huge influence for me. And I think, you know, in some ways, I think he's on a whole other level than just a random famous person dying. But, I mean, that could be a little egotistical of me to say, too. I just, for me, he was everything. He's been the influence in my life, you know, to sort of teach me how to have an artistic backbone, to teach me how to sort of be myself and not be afraid to be myself, all, you know, all sorts of things. I did a big long blog post about it a few weeks ago, but it crushed me. I mean, it was horrible. It was amazing, though, because, like, a lot of people texted me or called me, you know, not knowing if I knew or not, and were concerned about me. So it was almost like I reconnected with all these people in my life, and I got to know all these other artists, too, because everyone was posting about it, and we were all, you know, tagging each other or commenting on each other or on articles and all this stuff. So I feel like I've gained this extended family in some ways. I think Bowie is one of those that, you know, he was so on his own terms, and he, because he, his work was so varied, and that people of all types could find, whether it's a song or whether they influenced, whether he influenced, you know, how they saw their sexuality or their race or their gender or their artistic selves, whatever. I mean, I think he's touched, like you said, millions, billions of people just by being who he was, which is incredible. I mean, I don't know that we're going to see something at quite that level again. I think affecting my work, it's been hard. I think, you know, on some wavelength, you think, you know, I'm never going to be that good anyway, so what does it matter? But, you know, it does, because, you know, we're all individuals, and whether you get to that level of success or not, you don't know who you're affecting around you or, you know, what ideas you are meant to do. So I think the best thing to do is to carry on, but to carry on bolder, to be braver and just keep, take that next step and stomp it out, you know, because I think if anything, he showed what you could do just by sticking at it, even when people hated what he was doing. So, and that's powerful stuff. But I mean, I think when any artist passes away, people see themselves, you know, these are people that affected their lives. These are people that they, you know, held up as talismans or animuses or whatever you want to call it. So of course it's going to crush people, and it's going to take time for people to get over or get through. I don't think people will ever get over it.
I agree. I really agree, because there was a few times when we just had one creative person after the next pass away where,
yeah,
it kind of puts a damper on you.
It does.
But then at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I need to still create. You know, if this,
yeah,
person inspired me, I don't need to dishonor them by simply throwing up my hands and saying, no, not right now. You,
yeah,
know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So what are some of the negative aspects in being a female author, and how have you overcome those problems in your career?
I think sometimes it's, well, I mean, you're going to have people thinking, you know, always kind of thinking, I know why you're writing stuff, or thinking that, like, you know, you like female writers in the horror genre that, oh, well, you can't write that or whatever. It's not going to be real horror or whatever because of your gender. There's always, you know, going to be some person who has that. And that's not right. And you kind of learn, I don't want to say you learn to deal with it. I think you learn to be, to combat it, whether it's through your work, whether it's through, like, I do a lot of women in horror panels. That's why I like to have a lot of female horror writers on my blog and on panels and on the podcast and stuff, because I think it's important, not just because they're women, because they do good work. And that's, you know, I think where we have to walk a very fine line of leading with gender versus making sure it's also about, hey, this person is an amazing artist or amazing at what they do. Let's make sure that you know about them because they're not getting exposure for whatever reason. I think, too, sometimes you know, women kind of have, in general, when you're in entertainment, you have people judging your looks more, you have people judging your presentation more. I think there's always a slight nervousness about how, you know, people are going to react to you and if you're going to have to deal with creepers or, you know, comments or anything on media or in conventions. I've had to duck around a few people at conventions occasionally. I think they're just, unfortunately, you have to be more mindful and a little more aware and a little more careful, and which is frustrating. It's really frustrating. But I think, you know, by talking about it, by having a good support network, by keeping what you're doing, you know, that's how you can hopefully work through it.
All right. And, you know, that is a problem that is seen quite a bit. And I'm glad to know that your solution is what's made you who you are. I mean, there's so many sexist things out there that can discourage people who are a minority in the arts, such as females, gays, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's always good to hold your head high and be able to say, well, you know, I am who I am. I am going to do this, and I will succeed and be successful. So, kudos.
Well,
some
it helps
authors
when I have
are ashamed
like
to admit they have a... say what?
I say it helps when I have friends like you, too, though, dude. So...
Well, thank you. So, some authors are ashamed to admit they have a day job. Why do you think this is so, and how would you respond when someone asks if you have a day job?
Well, I feel strongly that this veil of, you know, you're not helping future artists if you're putting up this veil of, oh, I'm, you know, it's all or nothing. Yes, I have a day job. I'm lucky that my day job consistently has been in what I study to do in some sort of sewing or theatrical arts. You know, I've done a lot of side work. I've been very lucky in that respect. But, you know, granted, I don't tell people what my day job is. I don't feel the need to do that. But I don't think it's a shame thing. I mean, I think, you know, people are going to, they're not stupid. They're going to figure it out because, I mean, unless you're J.K. Rowling, Stephen King, or like Tom Cruise, or, you know, whoever, you know, Scarlett Johansson, that, you know, you're going to need a day job, or you're going to need to do stuff consistently. You know, that's why a lot of authors, even famous ones, you know, they teach or they do other stuff. They lecture, whatever. It's very rare anyway that people just sit down and write books and that's all they do. Let's be realistic. You know, Stephen King got to be Stephen King because of his movie deals. You know, he was very smart in how, you know, that was done. J.K. Rowling, without the movie deals, I don't know that it would have been as huge or she would be as, you know, as rich as she is. I think it's very important to take into account all that makes up success and not just, oh, you write a book and now you should make $1 million. That's silly. You know, there's a lot of work that goes from beginning to that particular end. So no, I don't feel the need to be ashamed of it. You know, I think I personally like it when I can go up to people and talk to them and I know that they're doing other stuff because I get fascinated by that. You know, if they're, whether it's side projects or day job or whatever.
Okay. And pretty much when people ask if I have a day job, I'm like, yep, I got two jobs. I am
exactly.
A day worker, and then I am a night worker for writing, editing, so on and so forth.
Exactly.
So it's nothing to be ashamed about. Be proud of
no.
it. It just shows that you bust your butt in two different categories of life.
Exactly.
Now, with the final question I have, what are some of your upcoming shows?
I really have been lazy about scheduling this year. I know I want to do Imaginarium. I'm hopefully going to do Fandom Fest in Louisville this year. That's what I'm looking at anyway. I'm also looking at, I'm still talking about a wine festival up in near Columbus, Ohio. Other than that, I'm still sending out feelers, and I know there's stuff I want to do. I haven't heard back on stuff yet. So I'm still, you know, this may be a year where I just really hunker down and write a lot, too. So, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, I'm going to get out there some still. I know. Well, I'm so boring and disappointing.
Well, I'm very pleased that you were able to answer all of my questions as detailed as you did, because
I'm for You should have cut me off. I feel like I talk forever.
Well, no. I mean, hey, we can always interview me another night. I mean, the information you're given is good information that people need to know and realize if they are going to be an author. And also at the same time, for people who are listening that are readers and they have never written anything and they don't intend to write anything, but they intend to do nothing more than just simply read our books, then this gives them a greater insight as well to see how much they mean to us. Because the readers out there, and it's still, you know, it's still funny for me to this day when I have someone come up to me and they're shy and embarrassed and they're giddy and they're like, oh my God, I finally get to meet you. I've had that happen to me numerous times. As a matter of fact, I had it happen to me about a week ago in Walmart. These two high school girls came up to me and they were blushing and they were shy and they're like, are you Alexander Brown? I'm like, well, yes, I am. And they said, well, we bought your books and we love your books. And they did their whole fangirl thing. And
I had it happen like twice in like the past 6 months. And it is the weirdest thing. Like, it's awesome. But it's just like, oh okay.
I'm not used to it yet. I'm still not used to it. And the thing is with these girls, I didn't know them, you know, it was just like, wow, okay, I have no idea who you are, but you know who I am.
Awesome.
And,
anyway,
it's like, I think when you're honest with your readers by you saying things like, well, yeah, I do have a day job and then I come home and I write and edit, I want them to feel like they are important to me, because if they are not out there purchasing my book, talking about me on social media, or even, hell, running up to me in Walmart and gushing over me, all of those small things, those matter very greatly to myself, because I could even be having the crappiest of day where I want to essentially give up on everything, and then these two strangers come up to me and say, oh my God, we love your work, we love it so much. And then
it's powerful, because the week that David Bowie died, that was a bad week anyway, but that was horrible. I think that Friday I got this PM on my author page from this mom who, and I think I sold her old school at a convention, I'm pretty sure, but she was like so excited because she was reading it to her daughters and they just finished it. And I like, that saved my week. And I really was kind of at that point of, you know, what do I want to do anymore? And that really helped kind of snap me back to focusing and realize that, you know, this is something, you know, this is because of me, and that's really, really weird and incredible.
Exactly. And sometimes just the simple, no cost anything compliment of, I look up to you, or I enjoyed your book.
Yeah.
That's like receiving $1 million.
Oh my gosh,
really
yes. It really, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy, but even if it's just recommending the book to other people, I mean, oh my gosh, that's, or getting it in a library or something, just like filling out a form to get it recommended to a library.
Exactly. Well, it's like even today, I saw my name pop up as a tag on Facebook. I think I drank too much, had a hiccup there. Okay. So anyway, I had a tag pop up on Facebook and it said, hey, Alex Brown, you've been tagged in something. And so I click on it and it's a picture where someone has posted in a group, like one of the fan page groups or whatever, for like Horror Friends or something. I don't know. It's one of those. Mm-hmm. But it was a picture that said, what horror author do you enjoy the most? And it gave a listing of like four or five different mainstream well-known authors. And
yeah.
someone had commented on it, how about Alexander S. Brown? I'm like, yes!
Yes! Yes! That's awesome, dude. I love it. I love to see people going to bat for people who don't, you know, always get that attention. That's always, you know, incredible to me. And it's taught, like I said, it's a type of magic. You know, it really, readers need to understand that it really, you know, they have a lot of power and a lot of, you know, a lot of it's in their court.
You know, I look at the writing-reading relationship this way. As a author, I have a lot of power to my readers due to what I can present to them, due to the worlds I can take them to and the characters
yeah.
I can introduce them to. I have the power to create. My readers have the power to allow me to continue to create. So my
exactly.
readers are just as powerful to me as I am to them.
Exactly.
And so the next time when whoever's listening to this, and the next time when someone comes up to me and you feel shy or whatever, don't. I'm a person just like you.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me who you are, and let's just have a good time talking.
That's, you know, I agree. And that was something, you know, back to what we were talking about last time we were together about, you know, Brooke McCarter. That was something that I learned from him, is that he was so good with people. And whether you knew him for 5 minutes or, you know, whatever, he was so good at making you feel comfortable or, you know, working to at least make you feel special. And he was a real person. And, you know, that's what I want people to get when they, you know, see me at conventions or whatever, is that, you know, there's no mystique. There's no, I mean, if you want to think I'm some mystical being, that's cool. But, I mean, you know, I'm a real person. I'm not going to put on airs or whatever. I am who I am. So, I mean, I'm awesome. But, I mean, you're awesome too. Everyone's awesome. So I think it's this mutual respect of each other's awesomeness, whether, you know, you're the one writing the story or the one reading it. And I think that's, you know, really an important thing.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, no matter how famous I get, I do not believe I'm ever going to lose my humility. I don't believe I'm ever going to just be some jerk who spends very little time with his readers. I want to spend as much time with my readers as possible. Because,
right.
Okay. As an author or someone in the limelight, you're going to meet multiple people, and they're only going to be in your life for maybe about 15 to 20 minutes, and it's going to be constant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you might meet 100 people in a day, but at the end of the day, those 100 people are going to go home and remember what authors or artists were nice and which ones were assholes. So,
yep. And if they have your book, that's going to be a constant reminder of how you were to them, too.
Yep. And that can also influence an Amazon review.
Yep. Yes, it can. It's definitely all stuff to consider.
Yeah, I'm not going to name any names, but there's been one or two people where after I purchased their books, I went home and I thought about it, and I'm like, you know what? It did rub me the wrong way. I'm going to turn this into Goodwill. That's where this is going. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a few like that. Yep. Yep.
And, you know, that's the worst thing that can happen. You can, and this is for the people out there who are jerks to their readers. The worst thing that can happen, especially when you're trying to get known, is to present yourself in a way that is offensive or unnerving or upsetting. After the person has purchased your work, they're stuck with that work.
Yeah.
And they might go home, throw it in the trash after looking at it and mulling it over. They might burn it. They might just give it away to someone else who's like, yeah, well, I don't want to read it. I'm just going to pass it on to the next person.
Or just let it sit there. Yeah.
Yeah, it might just get passed on and on and on until it ends up in some little book nook for a cent and no one's looking at it. And that could be the worst thing to happen. I would much rather be nice and have my reader pick up the book and say, you know what, he was really nice. I'm going to go in and give this a shot. And then they actually read it.
Yeah.
That's the golden moment there when they read it.
Well, the thing is if you make someone's moment special, then they're talking to people about that. They're talking about your book. They're, you know, you're constantly in their, in a good way, in their mind. And that leads to, you know, further action, which is what you want.
Exactly. Well, we are approaching the last 5 minutes of the show, and I do want to plug one or two things really quick.
Yeah, plug it. God, I'm tired. I want to tell you.
Plug it up.
Wow.
Sorry, I watched
it. It is Women in Horror Month, but yeah.
yeah, it is Women in Horror, so yeah, it works. But, I do have two book signings coming up in this month, which is, of course, February. Pretty much February 13th at Lorelei Books in Vicksburg, Mississippi on Washington Street. I will sign books from 12 o'clock until whenever. This is no joke. It's whenever. The bookstore wants to try a new experiment to see how crowds react when you advertise that you're going to be somewhere at a specific time, and then instead of giving it an ending date, saying whenever. So, you know,
well,
that's pretty fun. So
that's fun. Since it's the day before Valentine's Day, are you going to write, like, schmaltzy little love poems in every book you sign?
You know what? I am.
I think you
It'll
should.
Be love poems that'll be disgusting and disturbing. But they'll be like love poems meet the Garbage Pail Kids or something.
I approve. I am all for this.
And also at the end of the month on February 27th from 12 o'clock until 4:30, we will be doing a book signing for Southern Haunts 3 at the Warren County Vicksburg Public Library located on Vito Street. And it will be myself, artist Courtney Weiss. We will also have author John Hesselberg, D.G. Bush, Melissa Robinson. And then we are also going to have a special guest there named Brenda Harrison. She's actually the tour guide of the haunted house MacRaven, which just recently opened back up here in Vicksburg, Mississippi. And for those of you who do not know about the MacRaven house, it is one of the most haunted houses in the South. Out of all the times I've been to the MacRaven house, compared to other homes that are notoriously haunted throughout the southern states, I have never seen a house as haunted as the MacRaven house. Every time I go, there's always something that's going on. And so we're going to have Brenda there, since we are all Southern haunters, I guess you could say. She'll be there speaking about her experiences with the house and being a tour guide in a haunted house.
That's fun. Gosh.
So these events will be family friendly. Feel free to come out. There is no admission fee. Just simply come out and enjoy a good time.
That sounds awesome. That's exciting. Well, we have about 90 seconds, so thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Sorry I talked so much. But, you know, we hope you know, this is beneficial to people, you know, and hopefully we'll come back and do another episode where Alex talks all night so I don't have to.
Well, I tell you what, let's go on and dub me in as the next guest. So,
cool.
All right.
Cool.
If that works, all right. If no one else is already dubbed in, I call dibs.
There you go. You got dibs. I'm all for this.
All right.
Well,
we hope you enjoyed.
Yeah. Have a great night and happy reading, guys. Thanks for joining us. And if you have any questions, you know where to find us, or hit up the Star Chamber show page, and we will gladly answer stuff for you. Have a great night.
Good night, everyone.